standing on a rooftop, looking out over London. Off to my left, far away in the distance, I can see just that faint, red, angry snap of anti-aircraft bursts against the steel-blue sky. About 5 minutes ago, the guns in the immediate vicinity were working. I was up here earlier this afternoon and looking out over these housetops, looking all the way to the dome of St. Paul's. I saw many flags flying from staffs. No one ordered these people to put out the flags. They simply feel like flying the Union Jack above their roofs. No one told them to do it, and no flag up there was white.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
I'm out of my own. Like I wanna go home. What do I feel? What do I know? But I still believe. I still believe. Through the shame and through the grief, through the heartache, through the tears, through the waiting, through the years, for people like us in places like.
Good evening and welcome to the English Defence League radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com, the English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to once again thank Dave for the great slides and the script for this evening, and the banner for the show this evening is English Defence League radio show. Satanic supremacy. So let me go forth. Welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell, and my wingman is Dave Agdor Milner. Tonight we'll be discussing recent events and framing the entire issue of racial supremacy in perspective. We will prove that there are no good guys or bad guys when it comes to the evil that inspires slavery and race hatred. The lies of the fake stream media, that have poisoned our societies must be exposed. This is the place, and now is the time. No surrender ever. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. Of course, that was by the late great Edmund Burke back in the 1770s. Fine words they were as well. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Of course, that was by the late great President John F. Kennedy. So without further ado, let me bring on my friend, my colleague from across the pond, Dave Agador, Mr. Milner. Dave, welcome to the show this evening, and I hope you're well, and not only to yourself, but to the American listeners, the Canadian listeners, to our global listeners out there. God bless you all. And with that, Dave, on to you, bro.
All right, Jeff, and thank you very much. And, of course, I extend my greetings to all of our listeners around the world and, of course, off Earth, because that's important, too. Yeah, guys, we have a ton of stuff to get to in this show, and some of it's going to be controversial. I'll warn you guys right now that we're going to upset some of the race pimps on this program, some of the people who trade on race hatred. And that's good, because that should be done, because those people are trying to drive us all apart when we should all be working together against the tyranny that is trying to engulf the entire planet. But before we get into those issues and also a little bit about the Wuhan virus and things of that nature, we have got a sad thing to report. We have an obituary of a sports great here in the United States, and I hope my brothers and sisters in the UK and elsewhere will indulge me just a bit. This gentleman died yesterday, and we're going to go with this right now, this little thing that I got here off of YouTube about this fine gentleman. This will be about 3 minutes, so let us begin with this. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Curly Culp, the Hall of Fame defensive lineman who helped the Kansas City Chiefs win their first Super Bowl during a 14-year NFL career, died Saturday of complications from pancreatic cancer. He was 75. Culp announced this month that he had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. His wife, Colette Bloom Culp, announced on behalf of our family and with a broken heart, the five-time All-Pro's death. The entire Pro Football Hall of Fame family mourns the passing of Curly Culp. He was a wonderful man of great integrity who respected the game of football and how it applied to everyday life, Hall of Fame President Jim Porter said. Curly's humility and grace were always apparent. Culp was considered one of the strongest players in the NFL during his playing career, though his position on the interior of the defensive line meant his play often went unnoticed. He was chosen to participate in 6 Pro Bowls, and he was second to Steelers cornerback Mel Blount for AP Defensive Player of the Year after the 1975 season. It wasn't until long after his playing days Culp retired in 1981 that he was finally inducted into the Hall of Fame. But after his enshrinement in 2013, Culp proudly wore the golden jacket of a Hall of Famer seemingly everywhere he went. Our team certainly lost a great one today, Titans controlling owner Amy Adams Strunk said in a statement. Curly was a game changer for our defense when he came to us in the trade with the Chiefs and was pivotal to our success during the Love You Blue days. He rightfully earned a place in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I was fortunate to spend some quality time with Curly and his wife Colette when we hosted the Oilers' reunion this past September. They also brought 2 of their young grandchildren for that weekend, and Curly's love for those 2 was very obvious. He will forever be remembered as a ferocious nose tackle, as a player and a Hall of Fame gentleman off the field. Culp learned to use his speed and leverage while at Arizona State. He was an All-American in football for the Sun Devils, and, standing 6 feet and weighing about 265 pounds, won the heavyweight national championship in wrestling. The Denver Broncos selected Culp in the second round of the 1965 draft, with the idea of turning him into an offensive guard. But when it became clear that wasn't going to work, they traded him to the Chiefs, where Hank Stram plugged him into the middle of a defensive line that ultimately would take Kansas City all the way to the Super Bowl. I guess I proved them wrong, Culp told the Associated Press in a 2013 phone interview. A little fireplug, that's me. Culp was part of a defense that included fellow Hall of Famers Emmett Thomas, Willie Lanier, Bobby Bell and Buck Buchanan. And in the fourth Super Bowl, that group shut down the Vikings' vaunted run game in a 23-7 victory. Curley was a dominating force on the defensive line for the Super Bowl IV championship team, Chiefs chairman Clark Hunt, whose late father Lamar Hunt founded the team, once told AP. One of many great players that helped build the tradition and foundation of the Kansas City Chiefs. Hall of Fame quarterback Len Dawson recalled Culp as a tremendous athlete, while Thomas called him ornery as hell.
Ornery off of on the field and a gentleman and an inspiration to young people off the field. Welcome back to the English Men's League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff, okay, let's move on with the story. I went ahead and told everyone, Jeff, about the chat roll and everything. So do we have anybody in the chat roll right now?
Let me see. That threw me out. Oh, yes, we got Bigfoot. Bigfoot saying hi, Jeff, and Agador. And also, some music is playing. Yeah, I know. I was having a problem. I couldn't hear Dave, so I had to call back in the mic. My apologies, brother. So there you go. Yes, we got Bigfoot with Bigfoot's Place, blogspot.com. Did I get that right, Dave?
It's close enough. Bigfoot's Place at blogspot.com. So there you go. Biggie, welcome.
I'm getting better than I'll die.
Yeah. Now we're going to begin, as I said, with talk of the Wuhan virus and the tyranny following surrounding that. And we're going to hit something here, guys, that should be familiar to everyone. It shouldn't actually be familiar to anyone, but it's something that we've come to almost expect from the elites. So, Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and run this. It's 2.5 minutes long. You're listening to the English Men's League Radio Show.
Rules for thee, not for ski. Austrian slopes avoid lockdown restrictions. By Peter Catalan, November 24, 2021. Austrian ski slopes have been allowed to remain open while the rest of the country languishes under a 20-day lockdown. While Austria has entered into another national lockdown, forcing bars, restaurants, cinemas, pubs, gyms, and all non-essential shops to shut, ski resorts within the country will be allowed to continue welcoming elites to their slopes. Austrians have largely been confined to their homes since Monday, and are only allowed to leave to buy food and to exercise under the 20-day lockdown. According to a report by The Telegraph, skiing is considered a recreational outdoor exercise, and as such slopes have been allowed to remain open. Ski lifts and cable cars have also been permitted to keep operating, as they have been defined as essential services. Austrian authorities have cited safety reasons for the decision, saying that the lifts are needed in order to prevent skiers from getting stuck on top of mountains. While slopes have managed to dodge the lockdown order, there have been new restrictions put in place that resorts will be legally forced to abide by. Only those who are vaccinated will be permitted to use the slopes, as well as the lifts, with unvaccinated to be refused access, which is perhaps unsurprising considering the government's announcement vaccination will become mandatory from February 1st. Those who refuse the jab will be facing possible fines and even imprisonment. Enthusiast publication Planet Ski reported that passengers will be required to wear FFP2 masks on both cable cars and gondolas. The slopes will also not be open for tourists, with hotels across the country shutting down during the latest lockdown. Bars and restaurants attached to resorts will also remain closed. The move comes around 20 months after an investigation was launched over possible negligence at an Austrian ski resort in the town of Aichgau. It was believed that the ski resort may have been one of the first epicenters of the Chinese coronavirus in Europe, with it being theorized that the UK's first case originated from the resort. The government in Austria has a history of making interesting decisions around which businesses would be allowed to escape lockdown restrictions, notably allowing prostitutes to operate in February, while bars and nightclubs remained closed.
Well, okay. I'll get into that in a minute. But welcome back to the English Fence League Radio Show. Jeff.
Yeah, the prostitutes can work. Do you know what? What a messed up world. What a dystopian world that we live in, Dave. You know, oh, I don't want a shot. Yes, you'll go to prison for that come February. Huh? Because I don't want a shot. And if you live in Austria, yes, you can go to prison for that. What law are you breaking? What law is it you breaking? I didn't think it was a crime to say no to something that will really probably end up killing you anyway. I mean, the madness behind it. You know, the madness, isn't it, Dave? Is it total madness, or is it just me going crazy loopy with all this crap that he put out there? Back to you, Dave.
Well, Jeff, it's just of a piece of everything that's been going on, and it gives a lie to all of this scare mentality that's been thrown out surrounding this disease that is, okay, it may be about as bad as the Spanish flu. It might be, you know, but if you look at the stats, again, less than 1% of people who get this die of it. Less than 5% of people who get this go to the hospital, and yet they're treating it as if it was Ebola. And this is just an excuse to wreck our economies and, in my opinion, to bring in socialism / communism. And you know, if you look at it, some of the timing is just really, it just, you can't suspend belief enough not to recognize this for what it is. This new Omicron variant. Oh my God, that sounds like a bad Star Trek plot. But it's funny, Jeff, how that comes out just before Christmas. Look, the Christmas season begins, and we have to deal with the Omicron variant. So everybody has to lock down again. What a crock. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I mean, just before Christmas, before the season of when everything is in top gear. Yeah, so we've got a new variant. Where's it come from? Botswana or something like that? Or has it come from outer space, Dave? Is it a Mars variant? Or maybe the Uranus? Uranus variant, Dave, or Pluto? I mean, it's just science fiction, ladies and gentlemen. It is bull. They're giving us bull, and a lot of people out there are sucking it up with a very large straw and staying glued to the evil box in the corner. How sad and tragic the time that we live now. I hope one day that historians will look back and go, oh my God, people were so, well, you can't, what's the word, Dave?
Gullible, Jeff.
Yeah,
gullible.
I mean,
gullible is the word I use.
Gullible, yes, that is it. No one likes to think outside the box apart from people like ourselves. You've always felt that way, that you've got to look out and look in to see exactly what they're doing. And thank goodness people like us, Dave, and many others like us, are fighting back the way that we do the best, with our voices, the truth. And no matter how much they try to crush the truth, it will always surface, won't it, Dave? It will always surface, no matter what they do. And they, the evil ones out there, they will not prevail. They will go down in flames. But that's just me, Dave. You know, I've always been a born optimist, and a bit the same as yourself, Dave. Back to you, bruv.
I mean... So many people around the planet are getting so tired of this, and the fake stream media is helping in suppressing a lot of the news. Thousands of people are now out there demonstrating against this this tyranny that is going on, that is surrounding this stuff. You know, we're talking about Europe. We're talking about the UK. We covered this last week. We're talking about Australia. We're talking about people who have had enough. They've had enough. And yet the lie continues. The tyranny continues. I'm already stacking up stories for next week, you know, which will be into December at that point. I'm already stacking up stories where they basically want to cancel Christmas. All right. You know, it's ridiculous. And that's the thing, though. We have to resist this. We have to resist it. And before I get into that story, Jeff, I've got to read one of a story of resistance that I shared with you. This comes from an individual named Dakota Smith, and it was posted on the 24th of this month at Yahoo, quote-unquote, news, or actually they took it from the Los Angeles Times. I love this story, guys. L.A. firefighter accused of vulgar act in protest over vaccine mandate. Of course, we know it's not a vaccine. It's just a therapeutic that doesn't work very well. All right, I'm just going to read a little bit of this because this is fun. All right, the Los Angeles Fire Department is investigating an incident in which a firefighter, quote, responded inappropriately, end quote, after being handed a letter to comply with the city's vaccine mandate, a department spokeswoman said Wednesday. All right, let me just make sure. Okay, all right. The LA FD member responded to receiving the non-compliance letter by, get this, guys, dropping his pants and wiping his buttocks with the letter, leaving fecal matter on the document. Okay, well, why isn't this guy working for the San Francisco part? But anyway, before dropping it to the ground, according to the stentorians of the Los Angeles City, a group representing African-American firefighters. All right. Now, I don't know the name of this individual, but I do know one thing, Jeff and listeners. I do know one thing. He's a hero. He's one of my new heroes, because that's exactly what should be done with all of this. Resist. That's what he's doing. He's thinking of his life and his family's life and the lives of his children. He's resisting, and he's doing it with style. What do you think, Jeff?
I would agree. Everything you said there, I was nodding my head. The guy was in right. I know he must have been totally enraged, which you don't always drop his rage. If you get something like that, I probably would do something like that myself personally, don't you? And so would you probably. But to be a firefighter and to say, what? This is what I think that you could imagine what was on his mind. He was enraged. Enraged what they sent a letter to him to comply. This is his compliance, wiping his arse on it and throwing it on the floor. Good on him. Good on him. And we don't know his name. We don't want to broadcast his name because we know that people are being right on his case. But you're an hero, buddy. If you're listening to our show, you're one of us. God bless you. Back to you, Doug. I just want to also say that Bigfoot made a comment a little while ago when I was talking about Uranus and that, and the variants and that. He said, oh, Uranus is in Missouri. I was there last summer. Good on you, Biggie. Back to you, Doug.
I actually missed out on that one because I was going to say, well, these policies are certainly...
I like that.
Yeah, these policies are certainly out of somebody's anus, that's for sure. All right, now, guys, we're going to close this up a bit because this actually, again, we say that this that they've been lying to us this whole time about this Wuhan virus, and there is so much evidence of it. So many people don't have to comply with these mandates. It's ridiculous. They're usually people who are the, you know, quote unquote elites, like we covered in that story just before we talked about the firefighter. All right, they're usually the elites, and somehow they don't seem to have to follow the same rules as the rest of us. But this goes even further. And Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and roll this one now. It's about 2.5 minutes long. And if I don't come back right away, you can, please do me the favor of talking a little bit, because when I come back, I'm also going to have a nice little song to play, because I know the exact thing that needs to be done about this. This guy comes from, again, the 24th of this month. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show.
Biden mandates vax for cross-border truckers, exempts border crossers. By John Binder on November 24, 2021. In January 2022, President Joe Biden's administration will begin implementing a Chinese coronavirus vaccine mandate on all cross-border travelers, primarily truck drivers, at United States land ports of entry while exempting illegal border crossers. As Breitbart News reported, Biden's administration is planning to require the vaccine for all essential cross-border travelers entering U.S. land ports of entry. The mandate is mostly be targeted at truck drivers who cross between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. President Joe Biden will require essential, non-resident travelers crossing U.S. land borders, such as truck drivers, government and emergency response officials, to be fully vaccinated beginning on January 22nd, the administration planned to announce, the Associated Press reports. Noticeably exempt from the vaccine mandate are border crossers and illegal aliens, hundreds of thousands of whom successfully get released into the U.S. interior as a result of Biden's expansive catch-and-release program. For months, Biden and White House officials have refused to endorse a vaccine mandate for border crossers, even as millions of Americans are facing layoffs if they do not take the vaccine. They're not intending to stay here for a lengthy period of time, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said when asked in September why Americans are required to get the vaccine while border crossers remain exempt. The Department of Homeland Security, DHS, has made clear that they are simply offering the vaccine to border crossers who are apprehended but are not requiring the vaccine. Democrats in Congress, like the Biden administration, have refused to endorse vaccine mandates for millions of foreign nationals. In September, House Democrats voted down a plan that would have imposed vaccine mandates on legal immigrants who wish to adjust their status to remain living in the U.S. Top DHS officials expect more than 2 million border crossers to have arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border by the end of the year. Few to none, experts have said, are vaccinated. John Binder is a reporter for Breitbart News. Email him at jbinder@breitbart.com. Follow him on Twitter here.
And welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff, while I'm setting a little something up, what are your views?
Well, I just think that it's just crazy, to try to, get the drivers mandated and this, that, and the other across the borders. I think it's going to be... I don't think Biden realises the sort of... trouble. Well, he knows. He don't really care, does he? Because someone else is pulling his strings. He don't really care. He divvies around in a daze as it is. And he'll say what he's told to say, and he'll do what he's told to do. Don't get his hand as he say, oh, I better not say, because the people back there might not like that. And it's quite obvious that he's been worked and played by the dark inner circle there, who's playing him and are playing the rest of the people. And you know what? They don't care what we think or what you think. The American people think. They don't care. The same as Bozo over here. He don't care. He just goes on his blabbering ways and like he normally does. Don't really care about us. We're just the natives. You know, they look as the native chaps are rather restless today. You know, that's the way they look at us, you know. But anyway, Dave, that's my... It just makes me so angry. It does. It makes you want to blow your top. But it's just this terrible time that we live. I mean, it's all I'll say is just it's amazing the journey that we've the road that we've walked down, Dave, and how things have changed from a world that was, yes, there was problems in the world, but never did we, you know, most of us ever dream that we'd come to a stage like this where it's they're trying to turn the world into some sort of Marxist dystopia with a cult of death that leads the way. And this is crazy. It's crazy, and it will never work. And it will be defeated, sadly, by a lot of people that's not going to give up their freedoms, that will fight and defend it, like they've always done. And those people, yes, you out there, you know you are the dystopian ones. I call them nowadays, new word for them people. Yeah, but your days will come to an end, like all tyrants. You fight for the day, and you're going to live it up until you're finally crushed under the foot of people, the normal people, because they've had enough. People have had enough. And you can see it now worldwide, the rage that's going on across the globe. And it's going to get stronger and stronger. And they think they can bring in sort of authoritarian view things to do to quell the people, being raging about this. It's too many people to stop us. People will, you know, come after you in a hypothetical way. So I can't say, because you know what they're like. They're looking at me. They're watching me. They watch everything we do, everything we say. And everything you say will be taken down and used in evidence against you. Anyway, Dave, I've gone on me little tyrant, tyrannic rant. Do you like that, Dave? That tyrannic rant. Hey, back to you, bud.
All right, well, Jeff, there's really one way that the people can fight back substantially. And I'm going to show you guys exactly what that is. But, Jeff, would you please check the chat to see if there's anything before I start this?
I certainly will. No, it's still the same chat as it was previously, the comment that Biggie made, Bigfoot made. So, yeah, go ahead, Dave.
All right. Well, this is one way that the people can substantially fight back. And if enough of us did this, then I think a lot of this would turn around. Check this little 3-minute ditty out from 1969. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show, and this is one that some of you may have never heard before.
Take my life, do what? So I call the police. call the musicians is on strike.
Say, that was different. That was over 52 years old, that tune. Whoa, man. That was good. Dave, thank you, brother, for finding that. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Cheers, mate.
Well, you're welcome, Jeff, and welcome back to the English Basic Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. That was Vic Venus. Everybody's on strike. You can find it on YouTube, but I originally heard this song many, many, many years ago because a cousin of mine had this on 45. And, yeah, it's not – I guarantee this is not something that you're going to get to hear on, you know, you guys in the UK on Gold or, you know, any of these other things. Like, it's kind of obscure, but – There was quite a bit of that action going on in 69, as we know. And, you know, that's kind of what I feel about this Wuhan thing. Guys.
Yeah, there's always, back in that, if I remember right, there was always a rebel thing going on with the people. And there was also resistance about whatever. It was just the way people are. They're going to resist against whatever the world tries to throw at them. And that's what we see there. And you notice that people like Alex and the Bat, he will do a journey. And it is about rebelling against, you know, what's going on. Speaking, and the only way to do it is put it to words and play it, because you get more people listen to music, don't you? You know, it's a great way to get a message across to the people, especially to our global patriots out there, isn't it, Dave? It's brilliant, I must admit. Back to you, Dave.
All right, yeah. And, you know, that is a solution, because these people are just, it doesn't really seem to matter that there are hundreds of thousands of people, all told, worldwide that are demonstrating against this Wuhan virus tyranny. It doesn't seem to matter to them. They're keeping up with it. I mean, the Macron over in France supposedly had gotten the biomod shot into him twice, and he still got the Wuhan, which is more proof that the whole thing doesn't work. But they're keeping up with the tyranny. They're keeping on with the tyranny, and really I think the best way that the people can respond is just to say, okay, you know what? We're on strike. All right. Until you guys stop this nonsense and stop trying to destroy our societies with all these migrants coming in to all of our countries and with all this Wuhan virus tyranny, try growing your own food and transporting it to your own tables and doing things of that. Now, yeah, you try doing it for a while, elites. Try doing a little bit of your own work for a change, and we're going to just sit this one out for a while until you decide.
Well, not only
elite,
Dave, I was going to say, Dave, that the elite will always have a way to compensate for that. They will get people. They will pay people top dollar to make sure that their food is delivered and cooked for them and all that, because As we know, they are the elites, and they will do things, and they don't care. As we say, it's the way to go about it is to go and strike this out and the but they don't really care. They don't really care. Otherwise, you wouldn't notice the difference. It's when it hurts them that you see there's a change, a mood change across that side of the spectrum. But you're not seeing it at the moment because they're all staying together and think that they can keep pushing on and we will collapse. The good people will collapse, and that's not exactly the way it's going to be played out. And they haven't got a clue what's coming down their way. They just haven't. Or maybe they have, but they think, we're going to live for the day. Yeah, but it will be short-lived. But anyway, Dave, that's just me thinking out loud. with a positive vibe behind it for the people out there that feels a bit desperate of what's going on around them. Stay, hang in there. Resist. And I'm talking about Australia, my Australian brothers and sisters out there. We do know, and we know what you're suffering that's going on. We know what's going on across Australia and other nations, what they're trying to do. But just remember, resistance is your way. You know there's different ways that you can resolve things. And your way is to resist, keep fighting, don't give up, don't stay back, fight them until they fall. That's just me. Me, Dave. Back to you, mate.
Well, yeah, it takes that, and you do have a point. Good example would be the mayor of Seattle, Washington, who was perfectly fine last year with the creation of a little autonomous zone in her own city, but not so much when they decided to make one right by her house. So, yeah, I mean, when it encroaches on the elites and their comforts, that's when they'll move, but they'll move a little bit more, too, when a lot of their lackeys in the population aren't getting the things that keep them quiet. You know, I'll quote the old Max Headroom show here and say, you know, a full stomach in an entertaining show makes for a poor revolutionary, which is exactly how these people feel. So, you know, there are still methods and still ways. And yes, everybody, as Jeff says, resist. Yes, definitely resist. Now, Jeff, we've got 3 minutes until you need to call back in. Would you like to do that right now?
I think I'm okay for the time being. I mean, if we got something that we're going to do, I might go in between it. But, you know, I might call back in between. But I did call back earlier on, didn't I, Dave? And so I might be all right, but I will call back. So give it another, say, 6 or 7 minutes, and I'll probably do that anyway. That's all good, mate. And I will call back in, but I'll just leave it a little time because I'm listening to what else we got next. That's what I'm like. Thank you, bruv.
All right, Jeff. All right. We're just giving you a heads up. Now, so, guys, we're going to get to really what is the main theme of this show, and that is the whole racial supremacy thing that we have been hearing, you know, just almost constantly. You know, white supremacy this, white supremacy that. And let's begin this coverage, first of all, by saying, Jeff, I'll throw it back to you after I say this. As people who have a Judeo-Christian philosophy background and things like that, anyone who practices racial supremacy, and it doesn't matter what color they are, anyone who does that is practicing a philosophy that is straight out of the pit of hell. All right, this kind of thing does not belong in our modern societies, and it doesn't matter what color the person is that's practicing it. And, but one of the things that you can tell about, okay, you guys remember this debate that Tommy Robinson won between him and this race pimp over in the UK. The race pimp said, "Well, nobody comes right out and says that they're a racist anymore. That's why we have to say various phrases and things are quote unquote dog whistles." You know, I mean, they don't come out right out and say they're racist, but we know they're racist because they say words like apartment. All right. But guys, what the worst racial dog whistle of all time is the phrase white supremacy. When you hear someone going on and on about white supremacy, and this happens in, you know, at UK media, the BBC, it happens in American media, CNN, and all the others. When this happens, it's usually someone who's trying to make a living off of creating racial tension. And they go on and on about white supremacy, especially if it's someone that doesn't agree with their political viewpoint. That's basically trying to color other people as a racist when they themselves are the worst kind of racist. And That's my view of that. Jeff, before we run this first story, framing a lot of this, what are your comments?
My comments is I've always deplored those people. One of our worst enemies are the white supremacists. As you know, Tommy Robinson has had his life threatened with these white supremacists, but simply because we're not going down the path that they want to go down, this dirty, horrible, apartheid sort of a thing they want to go, and using colour and race and all that. We don't believe in that path, and we never have, and we despise those people. That's the reason why, the EDL has often come under attack by these type of people. So we despise them. And those people that call people like myself and yourself, Dave, and others, the EDL, white supremacists, would you look towards the true white supremacists out there, the ones that hate our guts and would... You know, they would shoot us if they had a chance. They would wipe us out. I wish you'd get your facts right before you start slagging off us. Because, as you know, there was an investigation about the EDL. And it was inconclusive. Simply, there was no racial boundary whatsoever. We were shown to be who we was. What it says on the bottle is what we were. Our mission statement is what it is. And we'll always stand that way. So, and yes, we have come under attack by these people. But yeah, we get attacked from the left, the right, the middle, you name it, the government. Everybody wants to attack us, but, you know, we're still here. Well, I'm still here. Dave's still here. The EDL, the flagship EDL radio show is still here. And we're not going nowhere. Back to you, brother.
Well, yeah, Jeff, and... We're not going to waste a lot of time here today asking people to check our receipts and our background concerning our defense of people of all colors and things of that nature, because we've done that before. We don't have to do that anymore. All right. What we're talking about here is people who are trying to make an impression that there's a white supremacist under every bed. There's a white supremacist that's ready to jump out of every closet, ready to get people and all of that. Again, supremacy, racial supremacy is an evil concept, and more than just white people practice this. And thankfully, there are very few actual white supremacists, and they're dying off. All right, but there are also other racial supremacists out there. This kind of evil that knows no one particular color. Jeff wanted me to run this story, and we'll have a little bit of a discussion about this individual. And so I'm going to go ahead and do that. This one comes from the 22nd of this month. It's 4 minutes long. You guys are listening to the English Defense League radio show. Here we go.
Waukesha suspect Daryl Brooks Jr. made rap songs ranting against Trump, white supremacy. By Jordan Dixon Hamilton on November 22, 2021. Daryl Lee Brooks Jr., the suspect charged with 5 counts of homicide in Sunday's Waukesha Christmas Parade massacre, appears to have posted several politically charged songs online under the name MapBoyFly, according to several reports. Multiple outlets, including The Sun and Heavy, have connected Brooks to MapBoyFly music videos, matching his appearance to mugshots and other social media photos of the 39-year-old Milwaukee man. The YouTube channel hosting those videos has now been deleted. A SoundCloud profile under the same artist's name is still accessible. Brooks uploaded a song titled X to SoundCloud 3 years ago. The song opens with a quote from Malcolm X, saying, "I think it would take a whole lot of nerve for white people today to ask Negroes do they hate them." The next lyric from Brooks after the Malcolm X quote is, "Yeah. This that Malcolm X shit, revolutionary. This for my niggas in the Canadian commissary. For every ghetto in America, I know they waiting. This that fuck Donald Trump flow and whoever hate it," the song's chorus begins. The second half of the chorus finishes off with an underlying voice that repeats, "I got that AK-47, just like Malcolm nigga," as Brooks sings the lead lyrics of the chorus. The song is pinned to a Twitter account that reportedly belongs to Brooks. The first verse continues Brooks's anti-American tirade as he sings lyrics about devils trying to take him down and murdering police officers. I got that AK-47 just like Malcolm, nigga. These devils try to take me down, bet they coming with them. Police is tripping, fuck around, they be a shooting victim, I keep it on me. I kill one, for show, I kill the witness. He continues to express discontent for law enforcement and the criminal justice system. He also compares contemporary America to the slavery era in the lyrics that follow. So fuck a pig and a judge, that's how I'm alive it. Man, we was asking for too long, now they gotta give it. And I got homies in themselves trying to fight the system. Minimum wage, ain't shit changed, they still slaving niggas. Brooks insinuated black Americans today are still being lynched as they were during the Jim Crow era. They probably got a small town somewhere hanging niggas. I talk like this and they don't want to have a conversation. Let's face the fact that my people really built this nation. After you stole it from the natives, you're the truest haters. Brooks parroted corporate media's talking points surrounding former President Donald Trump during the song's second verse. Now let me talk about the bitch we call the president. A closet racist, and he play his part so effortless. From real estate to television had us all convinced, he said. At one point, Brooks claims to be worried about the future and what to tell the next generation of Americans. Further, Brooks seems to express anti-Catholic views at the end of the song's second verse. Them Hail Marys while you clutching on the rosary, and you still waiting for the Lord to bring you hope relief. Never. Before the chorus returns, Brooks shouts out prominent black nationalists in a short bridge after the second verse. In the spirit of Malcolm, Nat Turner, Marcus Garvey, and everybody that died for freedom in this country, whether white or black, and everybody that stand against white supremacy in this country, let's get it, he said. Police charged Brooks with driving a red SUV, which may be the same vehicle seen in one of his music videos, into a crowd at the Waukesha Christmas Parade Sunday evening, wounding dozens of people and killing five. He was reportedly released from prison on $1,000 bail for another violent incident just weeks earlier. A woman accused him of intentionally running her over with his car near the beginning of November. Law enforcement officials say they have not confirmed a motive for the incident.
And welcome back to the English Fencing Radio Show with Hills, Jeff, Spider Mitchell. Jeff, go ahead.
Well, if you want to talk about supremacists, there you go. There's one of your main suspects, total full of hatred, and that is where the supremacist attitude and ideology comes from. People like him. So there you go. And that, he showed his true face with what he said, lyrics. A total despicable, evil person. That's it. You cannot put anything else on him. He is totally evil, with no soul. Quite obvious, he talks about having, you know, saying this, that, but it's quite obvious. This is a supremacist with the supremacist views. Back to you, Dave. I don't know what you think about it, but that's my view on this person.
Well, Jeff, it is it's my view of him, too. I mean, obviously, I mean, quite honestly, I don't know why this guy didn't just, in his videos, put on a bed sheet and a hood. Because a lot of the crap that he talked about was pretty much the same thing as the KKK talks about. I mean, it is hatred, projected against whites. It is hatred projected against anyone that he doesn't agree with. And what did he do with that hatred?
It's a toss of a coin, isn't it, Dave? You look it like that. It's a toss of a coin. The two sides of the same coin. Hatred, the supremacist, the views, total. There's nothing about him that I don't know. Would anybody look towards people like him? He is despicable to kill innocent kids and that. There's not a lot you can say, is there, Dave? It's just a shame that his mother and father didn't believe in contraception before he was conceived. maybe we wouldn't have had someone like him do such a horrific crime on these kids. That's you, Dave.
Yeah, well, I was trying to say something, but hey. Look, is the kind of philosophical viewpoint that too many of these race pimps have, and that's what he is. His hatred and his form of supremacy led him to run his SUV into a Christmas parade. Now, Christmas is something that is for everybody. It's not just for white folks. It's not for any one race. It's something for everybody. It celebrates the birth of Jesus Christ and the fact that he was here on earth among us. That is what Christmas is all about. Jesus is all about love. Christmas is all about love. This guy running these people over with his SUV, including killing a child, at least one child, all right, shows what he's about. He is about hate. His philosophy is about hate. The philosophy of anyone that agrees with him is about hate. That's where it stems from. You want to talk about racial supremacy here, you're talking about hate. And it doesn't matter who practices it. All right? This guy is the quintessence of that kind of hate. And that's what it leads to. It leads to people being hurt. It leads to people being killed. And worse than that, Jeff, even worse than that, is that it leads to divided nations when, as I said earlier in the show, we should all be gathered together and resisting the tyranny that is taking place now. Part of the reason we can't resist it is because there are these race pimps out there making big money in some cases, and certainly getting their egos stroked by passing around hate and also by lying. Jeff, I'm going to toss it back to you because I've got a couple of audios here that I got from Kenneth McClinton that he ran last week in conjunction with Thanksgiving week over here in the United States that I think will be real eye-openers for people. Do you have any comments, or is there anything out of the chat before we move forward, brother?
I'll just have a look what's in the chat, and then, as I say, I'll listen to the thing, and then what I'll do is duck out. So there's nothing there at the moment. Biggie's just listening to what we're talking about this evening's take, so let me bring it back to you. What you said really summed it up. I'm sorry that stopped you in mid-flow when I don't often do that, and I've got to apologise to you because I don't like to step on you when you're in mid-flow. So my apologies once again, brother. But back to you. And then once you start playing it, and I can duck out and call back in again. There you go, brother.
All right, Jeff. Thank you. And guys, this next audio here is 11 minutes long, well, 11 and a half, and it's really something you need to hear because it has some rather surprising things that you're not taught in your history classes. Certainly, it has some things in it that I wasn't taught in my history classes many, many a moon ago, that's for sure, but this comes from good research, and this was first put out by Ken McClinton on his program, The Exceptional Conservative Show. And that is a program that comes on at 2 a.m. in GMT in the UK, weeknights, right? And it is a great show to watch. It comes on TECNTV.com. And Ken shares some insights as a Christian conservative, living in an urban area, not having grown up rich, that a lot of people need to hear about. We have a good association with his network and his program here on this program, and we're both proud of Ken, and we're always proud when he comes on our program. He's going to be with us, by the way, on our Christmas special. But He ran these two audios again last week, and we're going to run the first one. It's 11 and a half minutes long. This is from the 23rd, by the way, of this month. And it's going to tell you some things that you probably didn't know before, right? So sit back and relax and give this a listen, guys. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Slavery, of course, came to an end in the United States after the Civil War, but weirdly not everywhere. At least not right away, anyway. Whereas most slaves were freed when the 13th Amendment was passed, some slaves had to wait one more year until they achieved their freedom, as they were enslaved by the Native American tribes, specifically the so-called five civilized tribes of Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, and Seminole. Now, Native American ownership of slaves of African descent does muddy the waters of some historical narratives, but it should not be forgotten. Some argue that they adopted the practice, obviously from white settlers, in an attempt to appear more civilized in the eyes of the US government and to prevent further expansion. But when you think of the Trail of Tears and the forced removal of Indians from their native lands, you probably don't think about them moving with hundreds of black slaves. Or if you imagine a chief of the Choctaw, you probably don't instantly think of Greenwood LaFleur, who had a plantation in Mississippi with 400 slaves. Plus, when you think of the Cherokee, you probably don't think of them putting down a huge slave rebellion in 1842. So the idea of slavery within the Native American tribes being somehow easier is also a bit of a myth, as when runaway slaves tried to make their way to Mexico, they were often being pursued by the Cherokee or other tribes. However, to begin with, there were actually people who kept slaves for a lot longer than even the Native Americans of the southern US. These are the natives of Alaska, which was only purchased in 1867, and they held slaves for another 20 years or so. For instance, in 1886, a Tlingit man named Sakwa escaped from his owner. He arrived at Sitka and asked for legal protection from his Tlingit owners, and in the following court case, it was said, a custom or right prevailing among the uncivilized tribes of Indians in Alaska, whereby slaves are bought, sold, and held in servitude against their free will, and subjected to ill treatment at the pleasure of the owner, is contrary to the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. The life of the slave is entirely at the disposal of his master or his mistress, and it has been customary among them to kill one or more slaves on the death of a master, or on the happening of some other event, such as the completion of a new house, boring the ears or putting out an eye of a slave, or some other mode of marking the flesh, has been and is now a custom with some of the families of these people. The evidence shows that the object of such mutilation is to impress upon the slaves their inferiority and render their humiliation complete. Now, this practice wasn't exactly new, as the Russians, when they invaded Alaska, commented on the use of slaves in their battles against the Tlingit in the early 19th century. Then, of course, under Russian rule, serfdom was introduced and slavery was expanded upon. But of course, this wasn't the same form of slavery as experienced by many in the continental United States. And just before I get there, I do want to highlight a further slave trade in South America, just because I find it particularly interesting. As the Americans were fighting their civil war, the Peruvians struck out across the Pacific and began to capture the residents on Easter Island during their slave raids. 1,500 men were either killed or enslaved, or half of the island's small population. And this had a profound impact on the inhabitants. The loss of people in the preceding decades, along with these slave raids, helped develop a new cult, the Birdman cult, which eclipsed the old religions that were potentially the basis of the famous giant heads. As part of this cult, they would select their own leader by making them swim shark-infested waters to collect an egg, and the first to return would be named Birdman of the Year. However, this did little to stop the population's decline, and there would be very few people living there when other Europeans came exploring a couple decades later and began shipping heads back to places like the British Museum. Anyway, back to the United States. Of course, slavery there was just part of life for many Native Americans, as with anywhere else in the world. In fact, you may well have heard of one of these slaves, Sacajawea, who was enslaved as a young girl by a group of Hidatsa. She would then be sold to a trapper from Quebec, and later she would help Lewis and Clark in the expedition out west. Many tribes, like the Iroquois, would help return runaway slaves in the 18th century, and every tribe had a different approach to slaves and their contact with Europeans, so it's pretty hard to give a guide to an overall stance of slavery, as every tribe was different. But come to the 19th century, the tribes in the southeast, the so-called five civilized tribes, began to become more like European settlers in the United States. There are many reasons behind this. Notably, they now had many mixed-race people in their tribe, and often leading them. Greenwood LaFleur, for instance, was one of these mixed-race people. His maternal grandfather was Pushmataha, while his father was a French trapper. So whereas many full-blooded Choctaw or Cherokee may have opted for a life further from the American borders and hoped to maintain their way of life, many of these mixed-race people were happier to adopt American customs, including slavery. Out of the tribes, it was the Cherokee who held the largest number, and at the beginning of the 19th century, they held around 600 black slaves in their lands, while by the outbreak of the US Civil War, they had 4,000 slaves. This may seem low, but the total population of Cherokee was just around 21,000. Therefore, 10% of Cherokee people held slaves. Compare this to the white people in the slave states of the southern US. There, nearly 400,000 people were listed as slave owners on the eve of war, out of a population of 12.25 million. So, this meant that just over 3% of people were slave owners. But again, the largest slave owners among the Native Americans were mixed-race Cherokee, like Joseph Vann. And, under their influence, the Cherokee leadership even began to arrange their laws based on race, as in their Constitution of 1827, they banned anyone of African descent from voting on tribal matters and even becoming a Cherokee citizen. As many began to realize that removal from their land was inevitable, they were more keen to assimilate with the United States, negotiate better lands, and essentially become equal to the Americans in the eyes of the government. So when they embarked on the Trail of Tears, hundreds of black slaves were brought with them and were forced to work on newly built plantations in the southern US. Therefore, some of the Cherokee elite began to merge with the white slave-owning elite in the southern states, as both of them began to persecute black people. Many Cherokee slave owners did free their slaves after the Emancipation Proclamation, but they would have to wait a long time before they were recognized as Cherokee citizens, as the descendants of slaves held by the Cherokee were still demanding their rights in 2017. And back to Joseph Vann. It was in 1842 that 20 of his slaves escaped and began raiding arms stores in Oklahoma. Their goal was to escape to Mexico, which had outlawed slavery in 1836, and to free as many people as they could en route. 15 other people were freed, but they were quickly pursued by Creek and Cherokee, who killed over a dozen runaways. On the way, the slaves even encountered a couple slave catchers, one of which was a white man, but the other was a Lenape tribesman. They were bringing back a runaway slave family, but they were killed and the family was freed. The Cherokee then raised a militia of 100 people to pursue the runaways, and they caught up with them near Red River, where, tired and exhausted, they were promptly caught and returned. Some were executed for the killings of the slave catchers, while many other runaways were put to work on steamboats working on the Mississippi. Although unsuccessful, this encouraged many other slaves on Cherokee land to try and escape, and the number of attempts ranged in the hundreds. As for Joseph Vann, he died when a steamboat exploded in 1844, but his old plantation in Georgia, which he occupied before the Trail of Tears, still stands today. The Chickasaw followed a very similar path. Once hunting became harder due to decreasing animal populations, they took to owning slaves to work on land. This occurred at least as early as the 1790s, and the American government hoped it would settle them and sort of teach them about land ownership and assimilate peacefully. The Choctaw, like the Cherokee, also banned people of African descent from becoming citizens of the tribe, even if they were mixed race. In 1840, they expelled any free black people from their land, and any who remained risked being enslaved for life. But don't believe that this was a view held by everyone in the tribe. Some Choctaw, like Cherokee or other Native Americans, despised slavery and even housed runaway slaves. The Creek again followed a similar path after the Trail of Tears. And some believed that the work that the enslaved black people did was the work of women in their society, and therefore this made them inferior. Thus, this justified enslaving them in their new home. Plus, they even began raiding Seminole land looking for further slaves. And this was because the Seminole were far more inclined to allow runaway slaves to settle in their land and assimilate. This large population of black Seminole, however, proved to be a tempting target for white and Creek slavers. So, although the Seminole did have slaves, they didn't base their society on race, and any freeman, whether black or native, was a free man. But as the 19th century progressed, many began to adopt the Creek and White model of chattel slavery, which forced many black Seminoles to escape to Mexico in order to escape a life in slavery. So when the Confederate States broke away from the Union, up to 10% of Native Americans, albeit mixed-race Native Americans, held slaves. As such, and given their location, many of them joined the Southern states. The Choctaw created a number of regiments, and possibly Jack Amos, or He Who Goes Out and Kills, was their most famous soldier in the Confederate armies. Stan Doite led the Cherokee into battle against the Union, while John Jumper led the Seminole. But given the Seminole stance on slavery, it shouldn't come as a surprise that many actually decided to aid the Union under Billy Bowlegs. And even the Cherokee were divided on the issue. Some under Jack Ross wanted to remain neutral aside with the Union, and there were some religious movements who wanted to go back to the traditional ways and abolish slavery, like the Kituwa Society. So again, opinions were divided during the war, which pitted native against native. At the end of the war, the United States needed to conclude separate treaties with the tribes in 1886, which means that they owned slaves for 1 year longer than the southern white plantation owners. As part of the treaties, many of the slaves were given citizenship to the tribe in which they were enslaved. But over the years, this was taken away from them. And as mentioned before, the fight to restore their citizenship took decades, over 140 years in fact, as it was only in 2017 that the US District Court ruled that these descendants should have citizenship rights in the Cherokee Nation. But there are similar fights ongoing with the other tribes, like the Choctaw. So the legacy of slavery in the Native American tribes continues today, but it is often an overlooked aspect of history. And this brings me to my question today. Do you know of any other forgotten slave trades? A couple that come to my mind are the Genoese galley slaves or the Turkic raids into Russia. But if you know of any others, leave them in the comments below.
And welcome back to the English Fence League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff, your comments.
Well, what I read into this is that slavery's been around probably from beginning of time. I would say that, Dave. I mean, you had the Indians that were doing slavery probably before anybody set foot on the shores of the United States. This goes back probably to in caveman times. It's slavery's all around, and it's deplorable. But unfortunately, I don't think we will ever be able to stamp it out properly because it's been around so long. It's nearly as long as the beginning of time, especially where humans are concerned. It's just a despicable part of the human characteristic that some of those, as you say, tribes, you know, that they would do that. They would go to another tribe, kill, you know, a lot of the men and that, and capture the women and children, put them in their own tribes, and they would continue. And other tribes would do the same with them. So this went on. This was going on well before, you know, the Europeans ever set foot on the United States shores. And it's probably across the world. And as we know, the most famous slavery was the cultists of death, and they've always been involved with slavery, and we've got it up to today's standards as well. Even in the 21st century, slavery is here, it's now, and it's thriving, and it always will, until people decide enough is enough and they stamp it out. But fortunately, that's not the case, because there's a lot of people in high positions that don't want to say too much about it because they make too much money out of this slave trade, the human slave trade, ladies and gentlemen. Dave, I don't know if you agree with the way that I look. I thought that was really interesting what I read into that, but also that put me on different aspects of how far slavery goes back and the beginning of time, I would say. Dave, your thoughts?
Well, Jeff, much of this white supremacy talk centers around the enslavement of black Africans in the United States of America. That's a big focus. Now, of course, you know and I know and everyone else should know that slavery is still going on today, particularly in Islamic countries. That we should, you know, everybody should know that. I mean, you can even find that. If you just look up who is holding slaves now, even the United Nations admit that slavery is going on in these mostly Islamic countries, but also in countries in the Far East. All right, but for the race pimps out there, this isn't good enough. They constantly harp on the slavery of black Africans in the United States of America, and that's why this audio was so important. Now, it did not mention the fact that more black African slaves went to South America than went to North America, but it does mention one very fascinating fact, okay? And that is the statistic. Per capita, it said, approximately 3% of American whites in the South owned slaves. And approximately 10% of American Indians owned slaves at the same time. Now, you can bump those numbers any way you want to. You can say, for instance, approximately 4% of American whites owned slaves and approximately 9% of American Indians owned slaves. But even if you use the numbers massaged like that, it definitely has created a difference here from the narrative that we're constantly being bombarded with by the race pimps who go on and on and on about white supremacy right now. And these are the same people who say that they'll never get over slavery, they'll never get over Jim Crow, and it's all white people's fault, when it's just been proven that no, it is not. And Jeff, I'm going to toss it over to you for comment before I make my final point.
No, you made some really good points there, Dave. And as I say, if you work out numbers and that, but it doesn't matter. You know, if you put the numbers in front of them and show these people, they're so wanting to brainwash people that they will deny that those are the facts. No matter how much you put it in front of them, you show them the true facts, they will deny it because they're in denial. And their narrative, it goes against their narrative, and they can't have that. So they will call you liar, they'll call you names, they'll call you anything, because we know that we tell the truth, and they lie. Put it in a nutshell, they lie, and they misinform, and that is what they're here for. This is what they do. It's their narrative, and no matter what we say or do, won't change their narrative. And that's, Dave, I think I said what I had to say. That's you, mate.
All right, Jeff. Yeah, well, and you're right. You're right. They'll, you know, it's what I read in a book one time. It's called Hicks. In other words, head in cement syndrome. They're not willing to think a different way, especially since they don't benefit from that kind of thought. Sometimes truth is painful. Sometimes truth isn't pleasant. That's why the slogan for my show, The Unpleasant Blind Guy, is truth is not always pleasant. And it isn't. But this is being used, Jeff, and this is going to make some of the race pimps out there very upset, but let them be upset. This is being used to try and replace white people on popular media with people of other colors. In other words, an underrepresentation now of whites and an attempt to just wipe them out from the current media. Now, I'll give you guys some examples. The first one is an example of a TV commercial over here in the United States that's run for decades. I'm certain that Bigfoot there in the chat will recognize this commercial when I talk about it. It comes on during the holidays, you know, and in the Christmas season. It's for Hershey's Kisses. And it's these little Hershey's Kisses that are kind of arranged in a Christmas tree looking thing. And they play, they play them like bells, and they play "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" and all of that. And it's kind of cute, and it's over with. But for the past couple of years now, they've interrupted that. They kind of run it about half and half. You'll see that one, and then you'll see one where they begin the commercial the way it's supposed to begin, and then, this cute little black girl grabs one of the Hershey's Kisses, and she and her father are baking together, and it's a wonderful time, and it's all very happy. Now, I can guarantee that the race pimps are going to be screaming their heads off now and said, "You just don't want to see black people on television." Let me tell you something. That cute little black girl and her father having a good time baking in their kitchen pegs the cute-o-meter. It is super cute and super cool, and I love seeing it. I just don't think that it's necessary to break something that has become a holiday, quite honestly a holiday tradition for a lot of people, just to put that on. If they want to advertise something else from the Hershey's Chocolate Company with that, I say more power to them, because it is totally cute. All right, another example would be State Farm Insurance. Now, Jeff, you've heard of State Farm Insurance, and it's an insurance company over here in the States. Now, a few years ago, they had a kind of a spokesperson, a guy, Jake from State Farm. They had a couple of cute commercials with this guy, and, suddenly, now, Jake from State Farm is black. No explanation. He just went from white to black. Boom. Now, I don't want people to get this twisted, okay? Although some people will. I am not saying that there should be no black people on TV. I am not even saying that it should go back to the old days. And, Jeff, you've told me, we spoke about this before the show, guys. You've told me that you can well remember the days when there was just this quote-unquote token black on all the TVs and the movies. I'm not even calling for it to go back to that. What I'm calling for is for white people not to be negated from TV and movies, except for roles where the bad guy or something of that nature. All right? That sort of thing needs to stop. All right, if you want a little bit more equality, that's fine, okay? But to completely just edge out white people as if they never existed, no, sorry, guys, that's trying to rewrite history. And that is, again, tarring an entire race with a brush of evil, and that shouldn't be done. That's as racist as anything that ever came out of the Ku Klux Klan here in the United States. Jeff, do you have any comments?
Yeah, well, as I say, it's definitely a Marxist ideology also with the cultists of death thrown into it. They want to change. They want to do away with our histories, and they do it together. The Marxists at the moment being the dominant, but with the backfeel of the cultists of death, because we know that they're the ones that's pulling all the strings and doing it with them. But the Marxists will suffer in the end. Once the cultists of death have got their evil ways, they will do away with the Marxists. It's quite obvious. It's the way that it's always been done. They like to play with them, and then it's like their old toys. They throw the toys out, and then they think they can continue. But as we all know, that they can't. The word peace with these people is non-existent. It doesn't mean anything to these people. There's no such thing as peace. When they say, "Oh, there's peace in Islam," not the sort of peace that we would look at being peace. And that's how I want to sum it up. Being a Marxist and a cultist, a satanic, evil cultist of death thing that we've seen, and we've seen it grow, and we've seen the way that it's taken its steps, and we've we've combated it each time. We've moved forward with it. Because every time it takes a step forward, we move. Because we've got to. There's no standing there. You can't. Not with these people that are trying to destroy our culture, our civilization, and bring the darkness of living. What do we do? We want to live back in the 7th century, the 6th century. Do you want to live like that? I know I don't. I don't want my, you know, my family, my great-grandchildren to live like that. But sometimes you've got to stand and fight for what you believe in. And all the time we see these things, we got to stand and we got to resist and resist and resist. And we will never back down. We will never step back from what we do. And we don't care what they say about us because we know that we do the righteous things. We will follow the path that makes to try to make things right for the future. Dave, I think I've said what I needed to say, and I think I don't know if I summed it up as good as what I normally do, but let me pass it back to you for your final thoughts on that.
All right, well, I think you did pretty well, Jeff, and that's my point, too. Now, I know the race pimps are going to say, well, no, you're just a white supremacist, you know, you want to get rid of black people. No, I don't. I've obviously said I don't, okay? But here's the thing, guys. And this is for everybody. The tyrants out there don't give a damn what color you are. They don't care if you're white, black, brown, red, yellow. It doesn't matter to them. They just want to put their boot on your neck. And it's going to be a lot longer than George Floyd. Let me tell you that. All right. And the one way that we can resist most effectively against them is if we get together in mutual respect, all right, and combine our forces and oppose them. That's the thing that the tyrants of this world, it doesn't matter what country they're in, fear the absolute most. And that is why they want to try and push us apart with things like this racial supremacy garbage. We have to recognize it for the evil that it is. And we have to fight against it. We have to recognize our brothers and sisters. And regardless of color, we have to say, I will stand with you and I will resist this evil. Whoever speaks it, whoever tries to impose it on us, if they try to impose it on you, I will oppose them. If they try to impose it on me, you will oppose them. That will be part of the earthly salvation along with the heavenly salvation of Jesus Christ. All right, amen. Jeff, anything more before out of the chat or, you know, your any comments else before I do my final?
I want to make a comment what you just said because I agree with every those great words that you said there, words of wisdom as well. But also I'd like to say that one word kept jumping out at me as I was listening to what you're saying, fragmentation. Fragmentation, Dave, because that is the way that they've created this problem, to fragmentate people, to make us as though we're different tribes. That is what they're trying to create. So we can't unite as one to defeat them. That is what their plan is, to fragment the good ones out there to stop us all getting together as a collective and to take them on and defeat them. That is what they created, fragmentation. Is that a good word, would you say, to sum that up, Dave?
Yeah, Jeff, I would. And I'll go ahead and do my finals now. All right. And I want to thank Biggie for being in the chat.
Absolutely.
And I also want to thank the listeners in the studio. Okay, guys, please check out the Unpleasant Black Guy page at Spreaker.com. My normal show times are 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, and that is 6 p.m. GMT in the U.K., and I do bring out new shows on Saturdays at midnight Eastern in the United States, and that is 5 a.m. GMT in, well, that's 5 a.m. GMT in the U.K., all right? I'm also can be heard on Thursdays around Fridays around 3 a.m. GMT in the UK, and I'd say about 9 to 10 p.m. On Thursdays Eastern in the United States on the Exceptional Conservative Show. That is at TECNTV.com. And guys, and I'm also available on social media. I'm Dave Milner, M-I-L-N-E-R, or Agedor, A-G-G-E-D-O-R, at various places, and Agedor _ at Twitter. All right, but you can hear me at Cloud Hub, all right, MeWe, Mind, Parler, Spreely, USA Life, and I'm always Agedor on Gab. And I want to tell Jeff, just give me the cue when you want me to play out, because I want to say to the foot soldiers, the angels, the truth tellers, everyone out there who is resisting shoulder to shoulder with our brothers and sisters, regardless of what color they are, be prosperous, be blessed, and no surrender ever. Back to you, Jeff.
Thank you, Dave. And something did come up as just before, actually, and I did meant to give you a heads up on it. I just see something come across, flash up in front of me. Mitch McConnell, I think, is resigned. So just to give you a heads up, Dave. So that should be interesting times now, shouldn't it? That's what just come up a little bit, and I thought I'd better mention it to you, give you a heads up on it if you want to look into it a bit more. One of my feed things that normally pops up and lets me know breaking news. So there you go, Dave. There's a bit of breaking news. I'd like to thank you, Dave, for the little segments that you did this evening, the slides, the clips, everything that you normally do. Ladies and gentlemen, we do some of the stories that I do get a little bit angry. Because it makes you angry, and things need to be said. You know, that we're not going to keep putting up with this. That is why we're here. This is why Dave's here with me, and we do this as our team, and you know, flying the EDL flagship like we normally do. We'll continue to do that because we know that there are people that listen to what we say, what we do. And I think we're making a difference. There's other great radio shows out there, like Rear Bow with the WBM 324 and Sunday Long Live radio show. We've got Joss with his WTFR network as well. Great people that fights the fight like we do. And these are my friends and my colleagues. And, you know, they're doing absolutely great work. And, you know, it's something that we enjoyed. I know, Dave, as it's the same as me, we enjoy doing this because it's so important. It's so important that we let the world know, and certain people, we are giving them hope. Is that what we're doing, Dave? We're giving people hope that, you know, we're not going to give in, we're not going to give up, and we will never surrender. As Sir Winston Churchill once said, we will never, ever surrender to these tyrants. So with that, I've got to thank you guys that's been listening, especially Bigfoot, who's it's great to see him in the chat with us and making some comments now and again. So it's just lovely to see. So with that, we'll be back again next week. And you know what? We'll have plenty of stories talk about once again. It's been my honour and pleasure to do the show tonight, and I'd like to say, Dave, let me pass it back to you, because I'm having one of these coffee moments, Dave. So with that, would you like to play us out? Dave was saying a bit special. With that, back to you, Dave. We'll be right back. you go. And of course that was Alex and the Bandits with the new album Prophecy, one of the tracks from that. So once again I've got to thank Alex for the great album that he's got out there, and to thank Dave for playing that that track this evening. So yeah, we'll see you next week, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you have a good week, and see you soon. So with that, all I've just got to do is this, and then I'll just say, this is the English Defence League radio show signing off for tonight, and we'll see you again same time next week, next Sunday. Okay, have a great week. Good night, God bless, and resist, 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 and no surrender ever. Good night, guys.